Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Dawn Ireland, President of CDH International, and this is the CDH Radio Show. We are very happy to be back again this week, and we have a story of a family who is currently still in the hospital at Boston Children's. Brian and Ashley are going to tell us about their son, Grayson. Tracy, let's hear their story.
Hello. Today I am here with Ashley and Brian. Would you two like to introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about yourselves?
I'm Brian Schwinard, the father of Grayson, who's a CDH patient, and I'm a 37-year-old construction manager and out of Concord, New Hampshire, and living with our other son, 4-year-old son, Lincoln, and my lovely wife, Ashley.
I'm Ashley, Grayson's mother.
Tell me a little bit about what it was like before you heard about CDH. Tell me what your pregnancy was like.
So, I mean, everything was normal as my, OBs, doctors, he was measuring, all of the ultrasounds were normal. I did the,
The sequencing.
The testing, like the blood test, the ultrasounds at the extensive like anatomy. Right. But everything looked good. I mean, they had no worries until I had a placental abruption at 37 weeks with an emergency C-section. And then now we're here.
Tell me what it was like there in the delivery room. Were you guys expecting a normal, healthy baby, even with the placental abruption?
Yeah, so we had gone to the hospital because I actually thought my water broke. I was just sitting on the couch in our living room and my water had broke with our first son, Lincoln. So I had that like feeling, that gush feeling. Mm-hmm. And I went to the bathroom and it was just, not to be gory, but it was just all blood, like coming at me. So, you know, we called our doctor and they said, come to the hospital. And she did an internal like checkup and, I'm like, oh, so am I dilated? She's like, there's just too much blood. Like, we're going to the OR, like we're having this baby tonight. Mm-hmm. So Grayson came.
That was only a week and a half before the expected date.
Yeah, it was 37 weeks is when this all happened. But then so I had a C-section and you could probably tell better about the scene of that.
It was pretty normal, just everything was going along exactly. Like I was experiencing a lot of deja vu from the first round with when our 4-year-old son was mm-hmm. born. Everything went
same OR room too.
besides uh-oh. That, you know, the placental abruption, everything was, you know, it was going pretty much right according to plan. And we weren't sensing anything from, you know, the care crew or the surgeon, you know, the her OB was, you know, everything's normal. And is, you know, when I'm watching the C-section happen and, you know, there next to Ashley and then, you know, they pull him out and kind of, you know, right
we
away.
Did hear one cry though.
We did hear one
he
cry.
Got hear one cry.
Yep. He got one cry out, but, you know, they, like I was telling you before the recording, they had brought him over to the table. They started doing all the normal post-birth check clearing, and I'm waiting for them to kind of hand them back to me. And that just never came to fruition. You know, they ultimately,
all the alarms started going off, and then I look over as they're stitching me up and I'm like, is everything okay? Like, what's going on? Because I knew too.
Well, I was telling her everything was fine because that's what you tell your wife in the delivery room. But, you know, that it finally, after a while, we're sitting there watching, you know, them working on him, and they're calling in a few respiratory specialists. And it kind of came down to what I was picking up at the time, that they couldn't get his blood saturation above blood oxygen saturation above like a 50 or 60. And, you know, they're expecting 100. So it slowly dawns on them. They tried releasing some pressure with a syringe on left side of his chest, where they were not hearing any sounds from. And that left side was the left side that he had issue with the CDH.
Yep.
So they a couple hours passed, they had moved him from the delivery room to a more open nursery area where they could have some more, a more open environment to kind of gather with around him. And
I went back to my room alone, like,
yeah.
And Brian was like, I'll come with you. I'm like, nope, please go with the baby. Like, I'm good. Thank God I I was medicated, because I don't sitting in my room alone, like, just was very, very hard. And but the nurses were amazing, and they brought in an X-ray showing me the bowel. You could see it, like,
yeah, they had
all
done an emergency
in his chest cavity X-ray. And
had the hospital told you that he had a congenital diaphragmatic hernia, or had you heard the word CDH yet?
We hadn't heard it yet, and they didn't tell us that yet. At least not me.
They had said that when she had come in a few hours later, after you guys have been in the nursery.
Okay.
That he had CDH, and that they were sending the team from Boston to Concord, New Hampshire, where we live.
How far is that from you guys?
It's an hour, depending on traffic, obviously.
Yeah.
Hour and a half. But prior to them even coming there, Concord knew that they couldn't fully support like what he needed. So Elliott Hospital, which is in Manchester, which is about 30 minutes away from Concord, 20 minutes. They were originally going to transfer him there. But then after talking it through, they didn't have the support that he needed as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for him to survive, until the Boston team arrived to New Hampshire or Concord, the Elliott team had to come to Concord with their equipment just so that they could stabilize him, in order for the Boston team to come and also like transport him. So it took, he didn't arrive at Boston Children's until after 9 hours after he was born.
Yeah, but you could kind of tell that, because I watched that specialized transit team that was a lot closer, that from Elliott Hospital. They arrived and they started stabilizing him and kind of packaging him up, getting him ready for transport to save that Boston crew time, because they were a ways out, at least an hour or more out on another call.
It seemed like they got there so fast, though. Time just like went so fast when you're like dealing with that. But
yeah, some fast and slow at some point.
Right.
So did you get to see your son at all? Did they wheel you in, or did they wheel your son into you?
Oh my God, I love that you just said that, because obviously Brian was with him the whole time. And then when the Boston team got there, the paramedic, the head paramedic of the team, had asked, has his mother seen her baby? And they were like, no. And she goes, bring her here before we transport. Like, she needs to see her baby. And I'm like forever grateful for that, and like her. And she still comes and visits Grayson in the hospital now at Boston Children. She's like, I have a special connection with him. So they brought me in, wheeled me in. and let me see him, touch his head. There was probably 30 people in the whole, it was just crazy. 30 people in the rooms, doctors, nurses.
Put everything on pause for a moment.
So that I could see him, which was really, really awesome.
Very special.
That was one of the pictures we'd sent you. Was that first, that first
you'll moment. See that when we send it to you. Okay. And then he came to Boston and Brian followed him there. And then I had to stay at Concord Hospital I was supposed to do 3 nights, but I did 2 instead because I'm like, I gotta go.
Right.
They didn't want me to I was about to just go, but I thought, I need to take care of myself in order to be there for him. So
yeah,
I did 2 nights and then came to Boston too. And I've been here ever since then. So yesterday was 3 months.
So Brian, you went with Grayson to Boston then?
Yeah. We followed him right out of the, we went outside and my parents had showed up by then waiting. They wanted to catch a glimpse of him as he was coming out onto the ambulance. And so we waited for that, and they loaded him onto the ambulance. And it surprisingly, we expected them to take right off, but they sat there at the hospital for a while. I felt like they really did not want to leave the safety of the hospital and make that hour trip unless they knew he was going to make that trip. Because it was really, they really had a tough time getting him to the point where they felt okay transporting him. So they finally left. And then, my parents actually were nice enough to drive me
down Lincoln.
And our other son down to the hospital. When you arrive at something like this, hopefully no one ever asked to do this, but it's when it involves your kid, it's such a whirlwind of information and paperwork and emotions and
social work.
Yeah.
And doctors and everything.
Yeah. And you're swimming through it all. And, you finally get to go up to the, he was brought up to the ICU.
MSICU. 7 South at Boston Children's Hospital.
7 South. Yep. And we are so grateful for that whole crew, that ICU crew up there, and the transportation crew.
Everyone is just
some of the best in the world. Like, we're very lucky that we live
so close too
in that area.
I know a lot of people don't have that,
right?
Just because of location,
right?
So they got there and they specialize in this. They're one of the best in the country at this. So, they got to work right away, learning about his condition. We found out that early on, especially with, he was born. I don't know if we'd mentioned.
Oh yeah, that. We didn't say that. He was 3 pounds, 10 ounces.
So that he was born really small, which we were not expecting. And his OB wasn't expecting either.
She looked at you right when she took him out.
Yeah, she said that we weren't expecting him to be that small. I said we are us either. So
which I think, can I just mention,
please?
I don't know about other states, but in New Hampshire the norm is just to do the 20-week anatomy ultrasound. And that was it. So it's like, they didn't find the CDH on that. So, but you have another 20 weeks. So for me, another ultrasound is so important. Like, it should be standard, I feel like, but.
I agree. So you're not in for a surprise. Did they notice any growth or him being small at the 20 weeks at all?
No,
No, not at all. No. Everything. I mean, the appointment ended up, that was supposed to be like an hour. It ended up being a little bit longer because she was having, like problems because he was like moving around so much, his position. He like doing, wasn't it the chest actually? Yeah,
she was trying to capture all the right perspectives for the
right doctor. Like all of the stuff that they have to do. And it ended up being almost 2 hours. And she's like, all right, got everything I needed, but like, still it wasn't, they didn't find that on there. But I think in the 20 more weeks, like that's half your
brain. Yeah.
I know that they do, like with Lincoln, my other son, I had one at, I think 36 or 37 weeks, just cause I had pushed about like, oh, has he dropped like for the position and all of that. Right. But if you don't request it or you're not a high risk pregnancy, that's just not the standard.
No, it isn't.
Protocol. And I think that is like not okay.
I agree. That is something that needs to be changed for women.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Whether it's the insurance, but it's always the insurance companies. But, usually. But right. No, yeah. I think that should be a standard in prenatal care.
Sure. So tell us a little bit about Grayson in his first few days there at Boston. What happened?
So I didn't arrive until a couple days later. So
I mean, the first few days was the doctors kind of telling us how they saw this going down and trying to come up with a care plan that worked best for Grayson. And that was going to involve basically learning more about him and his condition. They had said that we are not going to repair him until he is stronger or at his strongest. You know, they said that we definitely know we want to repair him within the first week of life. But we'd also want him to be able to survive that repair surgery. So it was a lot of sit back and wait and let the doctors learn about him just through his vitals and through how he reacts to things. And it was it was scary, but it was just
they had done the
Right. So that he immediately went on ventilation. And
they, the oscillator,
right.
Oscillator ventilation.
Oh, standard ventilator.
And
so they were also worried, obviously, because so now they're telling us after some imaging that his left lung is 1/6 the size that it should be.
One third.
You're right. It's 1/3 the size of a normal lung of what it should be, and that they can see a lot of contents of his stomach up into his chest cavity, his diaphragm, and they're going to try to get him as comfortable and as strong as possible, and then repair him.
What was the heat?
They're immediately worried about enough oxygen and potential brain damage and wanting to prevent that. So they started to cool him down right away on a bed that is specialized for chilling, small.
There's a name for it. You probably know bodies. What I'm talking
about. I know what you're talking about, but the name's failing me too right now.
I literally can't think of it.
I don't know what it is, but
like cool, like the heat, cool.
The bed has potential of cool and heat, a small body. So they cooled him down. They hooked him up to all these EKG leads, EEG leads, all the neurological
probes all over.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah.
Cause the first time I saw him when I had come the third day,
he had those,
it was like, it looked like cornrows almost, like he had he had so many, covered his entire head, and there was just like a lot, like a, I don't
know, yeah, it's just, they're getting live feeds from his brain activity, and they're doing a study on that. You know, they had people, I mean, they apparently have a room at that hospital, because he's not the only one there that has these leads on monitoring his brain activity, at Boston Children's. So there, I learned that surprisingly, there's a room there at the hospital where they have it staffed 24/7. That's all they do is they watch these monitors for these live feeds of brain activity, looking for any anomalies or any type of stroke or any irregular brain activity. So that was quite interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But they had a computer there in the room showing the live feed, and during some of the nights, it was interesting because I would, my mother was in the room with me, and we were, I'd go over and watch the monitor, and she would just rub his head, and you could see like the brain activity kind of do different things, and it was pretty interesting. But mm-hmm. we were just, you know, at that point passing time and trying to make it to the repair surgery. And at that, you know, now Ashley, a couple days after, she's now down there with us, and we're together,
which is cool.
Yeah,
it was really, that was like such a relief for me to just be there,
mm-hmm. and
not having that, like even just seeing him for 3 days, the first 3 days, not holding, like it's hard. I mean, the bonding I think is the hard for me, especially, has been like the hardest thing. I mean, with Lincoln, they gave him back to me, put him on my chest, like started breastfeed, like it was just, and so it's like complete, it's like black and white,
right?
It's completely opposite, and it's so hard. But after everything, it's just like you have to get the good days with the bad days and realize like it could be so much worse.
Yeah.
This has just totally changed me as a person. And
right.
And
but anyway,
and,
sorry.
And, well, due to the absolutely amazing like child like life services they had here at Boston Children's, right, they were you know, they were able to make they're so wonderful. They made such a nightmare of a situation
at least a little bearable. Easier.
Yeah. Like they put us up in a hotel
there's a hotel that's right across the street from, or it's actually, yeah, across the street from the hospital. Like a 2 minute walk.
Not even, yeah.
Yeah. And
right there.
His entire time that he was in the ICU, we had that hotel, and they
so our other son could be with us. We could come and go and see Grayson anytime we wanted, day or night, you know. And that just made, you know, that made a lot of the logistics, even just getting around town or in parking.
Yeah, and I mean, they gave us free parking in the garage, which would normally be $45 or $10. I mean, it was just totally free. It was just,
they made it wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They,
so we're
the
forever,
services and the resources have been like, yeah.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Tell me a little bit about how he got to surgery. How old was he?
So he was born October 24th of this past year, obviously. And so that was a Sunday. And the following Monday, so he was about a week and a day old, is when he had his repair surgery.
Which went wonderfully.
Yeah. I
mean, that
was probably the scariest like 4 hours of my life. We're sitting in the pre-op room, and we're like, and they called us at 90 minutes to give us an update. And everything was going really well.
Yeah.
There wasn't really any complications with the surgery whatsoever. They did use Gore-Tex,
mm-hmm.
For his repair for one side. One side they were able to fully close, and then the other part of it, they used a patch of Gore-Tex.
Yeah. Yeah, they said that there was only one hole, but they were able to close a portion of it completely, which left basically about an inch and a half diameter hole to close with the Gore-Tex, medical Gore-Tex material. The lead surgeon,
Dr. Dickey.
She's,
we'll mention the name because she's
phenomenal. Yeah.
A superhero. Seriously.
Yeah. She's like superhuman. She literally said that this surgery went that perfectly in her eyes. So okay. So now he's repaired. She did say that almost all of his stomach was up in his chest cavity. His spleen,
it was his colon. Stomach, spleen, colon, and
some intestines.
Small intestine, yep.
Which they were able to remove and patch. They
not remove.
Up. No, well,
remove. They're removed like, from up in the chest kidding. And yeah. Down below.
I'm just kidding. You have to make funny things out of this, right?
Hopefully they're still in there. And they patched him up. And so now he's recovering from there. And we're starting to get a better picture of what the rest of our stay is going to look like at the hospital.
Sort of.
Which is just not going to be a fast thing. So it's a long, slow, it's a marathon, not a sprint. We're getting a lot of that. And right. That's totally. But
it was probably like 3 or 4 days. No, because it ended up being a week. So the following Monday is when they put him on ECMO.
Yes, okay. After,
sorry, you can
after,
explain
that. Before the ECMO, it was a tough time where they had put him on a traditional ventilator, and he did great with that, like for a time.
For a few days, yeah.
And then it was too much for him, you know, so his lungs could never seem to get ahead of it. It was always, he was tiring out, his lungs were tiring out before, you know, they had a chance to really recover or have the capacity to handle that kind of ventilation. So as ECMO being a last resort, they put him on another style of ventilator. I call it a jet ventilator or an oscillator.
That's what it was, oscillator. Jet ventilator, yep.
Which, which uses a lot of oscillating air, a lot smaller. I think they said like 400 beats per minute.
Seems scary, especially hearing it. It's weird.
Yeah, the whole theory behind it's different than the traditional ventilator as far as the style of introducing the air to the lungs. But it was, it worked again for him for a time. You know, he did wonderful on that.
Few days, yeah.
And then he started to fall behind again and he got tired.
That day before they put him on ECMO, like,
yeah.
And looking back at like pictures of him, it's like he was so cyanotic, like he just was so gray and just,
no.
They had pulled the incubator down. Like it was just,
it was not getting better.
Yeah. It was really hard. But like in the moment, I didn't think like, but like now looking back and like seeing, it's just like, wow. Like,
yeah. Like you don't notice over time, like a few weeks, like how slowly like a color can drain from your, you know, a body, like, mm-hmm. and yeah, you know, we'll never forget the conversation in the hallway of when they,
yeah. The day that they decided to put him on ECMO, they had called us at the hotel. So that was like the following week. And they said, we need you to come here. Like we need to do something.
And there's no other option.
Yeah. But when like, I just still like in my mind, I picture that whole hallway. I'm sitting there in my wheelchair from my C-section and Dr. Dickey and the nurses or Dr. Dickey and the other doctors were just like, I'm sorry. And I'm just like, sorry. Like, and they're like, this is like this is what we're going to do or what we have to do. Like, do you want to do this? And I said, do we have any other choice?
And looking back at it, we were so thankful now because it was almost not an option for him because the policy is for ECMO, or me, I don't want to speak on like policy, but the standard is 4 pounds is the cutoff like for being a candidate, like 2 kilos. And he was 1.99 kilos.
Like that day.
And it was all
the day before. Yeah. And then that morning, he just went like
gained enough weight, like another ounce like, or something.
It was so close.
It was ultimately just up to the lead surgeon if she felt like she could actually get the cannulas in safely.
Right. And she obviously
she said that she thinks she can.
And you know, we had to sign consent for that, and it's just like every other time there was another option. Like if this doesn't work, then we have this, or we have the jet ventilator. And there was not, this was a lot, like there wasn't another option. And for me, I was like, this is like really, really scary, you know?
That was very tough.
Is he still on ECMO?
No.
Which is wonderful. Sorry, I'm like, so you're really good at talking about ECMO because you're,
they wanted to look and see how big his artery and his carotid and jugular were to see if they could do it. And she felt very confident that she could, the surgeon, that she could get them in.
She did. ECMO.
And she explained the other option too, is if they go down this road and they're in the surgery and they, for some reason, they, you know, the risk of bleeding is always at the forefront, right?
Or if they couldn't get them in, they had to do like the open heart
and go directly, which made a scary situation even scarier. She did it.
Yeah.
And she was super happy with it. And it blew me away going in for the first time to see him after he was hooked up to the machine, ECMO.
The circuit is just like,
it shocks you amazing. A little bit. Yeah. Because crazy. I mean, to see all the blood coming out in such a large, you know, tube. And
it's bigger than him. He's 3-4 pounds. Yeah. It's huge. And then this whole machine.
Yeah, cycling through that.
ECMO is seriously the most amazing thing.
It is.
Like we were so scared about ECMO because you hear things like, ECMO saved his life. Like 100%. I think ECMO it was a godsend. It saved his life. And the ECMOlogist and just the whole how it works is so interesting and just so amazing.
It is
truly. It's truly amazing.
But it's also like it's like a ship too, where, you know, once you get on it, you have to be able to get off of it. So
yes, that was the other thing. It doesn't cure it. It just
buy some time.
Yes, that's exactly what they said. Buys time, prolongs, not it. Yeah,
just it gives his lungs a chance
time to
rest.
Heal.
Yeah,
right. And that's exactly try and what grow. He needed. Yeah. And that. So they had clamp. They did the trial clamp after 2 weeks, and he did good for a while during the clamp, and then. They decided no, like we had to put him back on ECMO.
Yeah, it's not time yet.
Right. So he was on ECMO for a little over 3 weeks. And then they call us that one day and they're like, I think we're going to clamp him today. And we're like, you are? Like everything, it's like so slow. And then it's like, oh, bam, 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 like make all these changes. And it's just like, whoa, okay. And he did good. Like, he made it off ECMO, and that was like so wonderful because when he told us, like, you know,
that's good.
Some babies don't come off ECMO. Like that's a thing. And it's just like, okay. So when that was just like such relief for us and like my baby's good, like
breathing on his own again, well, with the help of the ventilator, but it's under his own power. Like he's, it's all him.
They were like coming down on the settings and
as far as ECMO goes, I mean, Grayson took advantage of that as much as it did exactly what they needed it to do. It gave his lung a chance to rest and recuperate and grow. And of course, when you're, on ECMO, it's the whole thing is about fluid retention in the body. So, you know,
he looked chunky and we're like, oh, you look good. They're like, no, that's not like him gaining weight. That's him. Like
he doubled in
fluids and
He doubled in weight on with just the fluids that the body naturally produces and in response to inflammatory. An inflammatory response, and the diuretics worked wonderful with him. I mean,
he's still on it now, but
that took all the fluids back, and his kidneys was a kind of an up and down with his kidneys. You know, they have to give him some medicine for whatever reason, but yet that impacts the kidneys a little bit. So, you know, they were really paying attention to a lot of things, particularly.
There's just a lot of factors kidneys. With everything, as I'm sure you know, with CDH, it's.
But ultimately, like Ashley said, he came off and.
They had him on the ventilator and then for about a week, and then he was starting to do really well. And so they said, we're going to extubate him. And that was the day after Thanksgiving. But he was doing really well like that whole week. And on Thanksgiving was the first time that we got, like, I got to hold him and it was like, so.
What
a blessing.
Yeah.
And like, there's so much to be thankful for. Like,
right.
Yeah.
And then the next day you held him for the first time.
Yeah.
And then the following day after that, they extubated him and he was doing so well. They were trying different forms of like supplemental oxygen, like different masks, the cannulas, all that. And he ended up getting a staph infection or staphylococcus staph infection. Because when they were suctioning him, as they do all the time, there was just like a lot of like fluid, like green, like nasty. Right. So they tested and he had a staph infection. So his heart rate was like going way over 200. Yeah. And they were like, yeah.
That was scary.
So they ended up having to re-intubate him. At first we're like, oh no, like we're doing so good. And you know, it's a step back. And
yeah,
I was trying to convince Brian, like, it's okay. Like things like this, it's okay. You're frustrated.
I bet a lot of CDH parents can sympathize with this, like where you just get to a point in the process where you don't want to trust anything anymore because you can have great days and then all of a sudden you just feel like the rug gets ripped out from under you and then it's, you know, and then it's like a setback or it's something else. And
but that's what he needed and that was the best thing for him. And he was only intubated for less than a week after that, and then they extubated him again and they started weaning him off his pain medication and
he was making improvements and that shocked within the doctors
within 2 weeks they're like it was right around Christmas. I finally went home
for
a couple nights. The nurses and the social workers and Brian had to convince me to go home for Christmas.
Right.
That's really hard, but you know, it's the balance with my other son and I missed him. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you don't know where you should be. It's hard. Like that is, for me, that emotionally has been like the hardest thing.
I think the only reason you ended up doing it was because by that time she had built such a rapport with the nursing staff up in the MSICU.
Like his
they were
nurses.
Just so wonderful.
Yeah, like I could sleep okay because I, that. Yeah.
Right.
They made me feel such like at ease enough to, and convincing to go home.
Which was
nice because we went home and.
But all we wanted
we
to
put
do
the
was
tree up on.
Yeah, for our 4-year-olds. Yeah, we got home.
We put the tree up on Christmas Eve, scrambled, decorated it, and he got to wake up. You know, we just want to make it as normal as possible for him as well. I mean, it's this is our normal, so how can we make this work for him and everyone? And yeah, it was really wonderful. And we did Christmas with my family and then did Christmas at Brian's family's house, and, or our family, I guess now. Yeah. We're married. But then I wanted to come home, and then there was a snowstorm. Thank you, New England. You're great for that. Yeah. So I ended up having to stay another day. So then I'm like, all right, I want to get back. But, so I ended up going back the next day, and they were like, Grayson's no longer needing ICU care. Like, what? And so the next day they transferred him to a regular floor, like a med surg.
Yeah,
just ten east. Yeah,
your surgery recovery floor. Yep.
And it was just like, oh my god, like I couldn't even believe it. It was just mm-hmm. so, but it was like, again, slow, and then it's just like changes like that.
Yeah.
I need to stop.
Yeah, it was like a whole nother experience on that floor. I mean, again, such a wonderful staff, and just, but you know,
at first it was hard for me because you go from someone staring at your child for 24 hours a day to not having that, and like them coming in just like as a regular hospital patient, like, and we had moved. So after he left the ICU, we didn't have the hotel. So I had moved into the hospital. So I'm staying still bedside with Grayson. Mm-hmm. But it ended up, at first I was just like, it was like pulling a Band-Aid off. I'm like, I miss my seven self, because I had been there for 2 months and they were literally my family. I can't tell enough how much like I love them, even for me. Like, they did wonder. I don't know.
Yeah, great.
I can't even, like, I'm speechless because I just like appreciate everyone more than I could ever put into words. So it was hard for me at first. I'm like, no, like I didn't even get to say goodbye. Like, they transferred him. But now I just had to give this a chance. And now obviously we have those relationships on 10 East, and being there has been so much. I didn't even realize like that I'm getting the bonding now that I wasn't having when he was in the ICU, because I'm literally staying bedside with him for the last, since 2 days after Christmas. So I've been living at Boston Children's Hospital with him. I didn't realize, I'm like, is it okay if I hold them? They're like, it's your baby. Like, I can pick them up anytime I want. I wasn't used to that. Right. I can pick them up. I can change his diaper. I can do anything that like I feel comfortable doing with all the cords and wires and tubes. But
I mean, they did let us hold him up on the SICU, but it took three doctors, three nurses, and a respiratory specialist to make that happen, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
So it was a lot more difficult.
And now it's just...
And now she's able to fulfill that mother role in almost every aspect, down on 10 East, where, you know, up on 10 East, where she's able to stay bedside and do whatever she wants, whenever she
like
wants.
Like, I can hold her, like, so it's that connection that I didn't get, and I feel so much... like
that's what got better. You through that. Yeah,
it's been really, really awesome.
And she played a lot more integral role in his care plan, where the nurses and the pain medication staff, and they're really looking to her for information on him and how he's tolerating stuff. And
I feel more like involved. I have a say.
Yeah, and you really versus, did.
I mean, I trust what the ICU does. I mean, they know what they're doing, but
yeah,
now it's like I can actually voice my opinion, advocate. Mm-hmm. When they say you are your child's best advocate, that is the best thing, the number one thing that I've ever heard, because that is so true.
Especially in health setting, yeah.
So has he started with feeds? Are you working on feeds with him?
Yeah, so he had, from the ICU to the floor, he had an G tube, an NG tube. And we were, we would meet with nutrition every morning, the feeding team, and tried bottle feeding, and like, he just wasn't like about it. And I brought in a pacifier, a specific one, because they only have the Dr. Brown's bottles and pacifiers. And I had read a report saying, not interested in the pacifier, just like pushes it out. And then the next day I was there when they had come in, because I was like, I don't even know, eating lunch when they had come in, or I just wasn't in the room. Mm-hmm. And I had offered him this pacifier that was like the orthodontic type. Mm-hmm. And it's literally what suits him now. Oh. So that was cool. And then the next day I had shown them a video and they're like, oh my God, like he was like going to town, so, like sucking his pacifier. They were so happy. And then we had tried to do passy dips, with the formula right before his feeds. And he, with that pacifier, he took those like did fine. And that at that point he was on, continuous feeds. And then they had, changed to bolus feeds, trying to adjust to like the hour and a half, and that, I'm sure you know, like the whole
a regular mm-hmm. step.
Yeah.
But he still wasn't taking
yeah, it out he, of the bottle. He would take the bottle here and there, but it was like small. 2 ml, 3 ml. And so we kind of were just letting him like have time to try that, but not like force it.
But he's at goal, taking as much of the milk as he can, formula through the G tube, the nasal gastric tube, where he's, mm-hmm. so he's doing great with that, but the bottle's tough and he's not doing it.
So,
but he's getting better.
And then bigger. Last week, 2 weeks ago, his doctor and I were having conversation and she mentioned a G tube, and I was like, oh, like, don't really know what that is. Like, sounds scary. I've heard of, you know, I'm thinking like the worst thing possible. She's like, well, you're pushing 3 months, Ashley. Like, we want to get you home. Like,
but they have to guarantee his nutrition, you know, and they can't like take the feeding tube out, the NG tube out, and let you practice bottle feeding, you yeah. know, without that in. So I'm thinking in my mind, it's probably something to do with.
And I'm calling you and you're like, no, we got to get him to bottle feed.
They want to send him home with a tube, like another tube out of him. And I'm just like, oh man, I really didn't want that to happen. Like I wanted him to come home, like just kind of free.
You say normal, but like.
Well, just free of tubes.
You know, and yeah.
Everything. But it, again, like not.
After going I mean, through it. Yeah. And they have like a baby mannequin with the G-tube, the peg. Is peg, yeah. And they show you everything. They're on the opposite side, there's the balloon, and the nurses are just wonderful. They put a huge binder together for me to explain everything, infection, dressing, like everything you could imagine, like how you do the feet. They're just amazing. And then he had come to visit and I was like, I think you felt more comfortable after yeah. seeing that and having that explained to you.
Yep.
And then last Friday, what's today, Tuesday, Monday?
Yeah,
Tuesday?
Last Friday. Yep.
So this past Friday, he had the surgery and he had his G-tube placed. But they ended up, while they were there, they found a hernia.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of a setback.
They discovered a natural hernia.
Like an
perineal hernia? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, yes,
exactly.
Thank you. Yeah.
That
they weren't aware of, nobody was aware of.
Yeah, so, and he had been having a lot of problems, like gassy and fussy, and like even the doctor was like, maybe that's probably why he wasn't eating,
because yeah,
he had just had,
could be.
I mean, they didn't know about that, so they repaired that, and the last couple days were rough. Seeing him in such pain is like so hard.
recovering from that. Because he was also,
they gave him a CERC, his CERC too then.
While he was on.
So he had a lot going on down here for the last couple of days. And then we were like, okay, he's starting to feel better. And then yesterday I was there and he's just like super uncomfortable. And we were looking at his G-tube site and there was like infection. So that's our thing. That's what we're dealing with right now. So they've been giving him antibiotics and just,
it looks a lot better. Like it's doesn't look like it's going to be an issue, but he's,
but that's scary. I mean, we're like, okay, we're finally on board with this. And then the, they're like, yeah, he has fever. He has, what's going on? And then there's like an infection. So you light it. Like it's a lot.
Yeah,
it is.
So, so this poor, I feel like he's, Brian was saying the other night, and I'm like, he was like, you know, his whole life, he's like been in pain and like, or what did you say?
But he just hasn't known like true comfort, like without any, without any of these things going on, you know? So I just, but yeah, he can still, this little trooper,
he's so resilient. He can
still smile and like, you know, that's, I, to me, that's why they're like heroes. Like they just, you know, they literally fight through all of this and, you know, they end up saving themselves and us in a lot of ways.
So he's a warrior.
So much so.
Yeah.
And it's, we're just now seeing him and almost ready to go home now. And
we're just getting, let's get over this infection and then finish anything else. Doesn't need oxygen
at all.
Yep.
So we, oh, they did place, we didn't say talk about that, but they placed a PDA stent in his heart, but absolutely no hypertension. Yeah. Like
a lot of the
things that like, I feel like a lot of CDH babies have and go home, like he doesn't have. And then that's like, the hypertension was a huge thing. And we were like, really, they're like, nope, no medication. He has, you know, great blood pressure.
Right.
And the oxygen, they're just keeping it 20.25 liters for,
supplemental.
Yeah, just for weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Not like heart or lung.
Right.
Like,
we got it. We got through the breathing, the lung situation where that looks like it's okay now. And now it's off and he's growing and his lungs doing his thing. And then the next thing, right, was the heart. Okay. Now we've, so typical with CDH babies was the
we're really talking way too much. We're like,
hypertension. But luckily I think that his heart was able to like remodel itself and those muscles around the heart were able to, once pressure was equalized, he was able to overcome that to almost no signs. Like they said, was he's showing no signs of that anymore. So that was like,
the echoes look great today.
And then that's feeding, was the last big hurdle. And we're pretty much there now.
Yeah. So we're,
have they mentioned discharge or have they mentioned that? How many more weeks you'll be there?
I feel like every time, like I'll ask a nurse, I'll be like, so like, what do you think in your opinion? I'm like, I'm asking for a definitive, like 2 weeks, 1 week, but
another week.
I think with getting over this
infection,
like doing the antibiotics, I think once that's done and just we're super comfortable with his care and we have a good hold on that. I think that, you know, car seat tests and all that discharge, I think that's going to happen within the next like 2 weeks, maybe, depending on like the infection. Obviously that puts us back a little bit, but so we're,
that's wonderful,
like a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So.
And then get home and work on bottle feeding and
let him take his time and not have to feel rushed, but also not have to be in the hospital for another 4 months until he's, you know what I mean? So it's just
getting your baby home and in the, you know, the, just being able to be intimate and private with your baby in your home is, you know, something to just look forward to.
So I can't wait for you guys to be home with him and to be home with his older brother. Has his older brother got to visit at all?
So that's, we are very fortunate that the, because of the pandemic, the hospital policy has since changed, but prior to it changing, actually when he was on ECMO, he came to visit and Child Life had made him a book that explained everything. So we've read that with him before, just talked about like the ICU and like just making, explaining it on how Lincoln would understand. And we went onto the floor and we just decided, we're like, we'll just, because they have the big sliding glass doors. So mm-hmm. the nurse crouched down and just explained like from the door, and at least he got like the visual of Grayson. And then, we had decided not to, we don't want to,
we didn't think we it didn't was the scare, right time.
Not that it's scary for us to, but if he had desatted and all these nerves rush in,
he
just didn't want him to experience his brother right. with that the first time. And then he had a couple weeks later when he was still in the ICU, he had come in and Brian held him and he got to like see him for the first time, which was really awesome. And then a couple weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago, they were about to change the policy, like no children in the hospital or no visitors under 12 years old.
Yeah.
So, but the day before he came and visited him like up where he is now. And that was really cool. And he went up to him and he was like, hold my finger. Like, you know, babies do that. And we're like, no, he won't just grab it. That's like put in. And he goes, oh, he's like, that's good. He's like, I'm like, doesn't he look so good? He's like, yep, that's good. He goes, all right, I'm all set. Let's get out of here. Oh. And but he was just, hold on 1 second, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, so we're
no, it's fine.
Have you both been able to visit him at the same time with COVID restrictions? Have you both been able to be by his bedside?
Yes. Yeah. So we've been able to do that a couple of times now. And it's either been, you know, due to like family or somebody, you know, being able to watch Lincoln or keep him back in New Hampshire where we live. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, because when we're up here, the three of us, Ashley, me and Lincoln, it's, you know, somebody has to stay with Lincoln. So we've been that trade-off, but yeah, there's been several times where we've had extended time with him with both of us, so that, and those times were absolutely awesome. Like those were really special, and a lot of this was all able to be done
because of the hospital
the team there.
Right now we're actually getting ready to check out, but did you already say that? Sorry.
We gotta
get in the last 4 days for the weekend until today, they got us a hotel so that could be with Lincoln and Brian could come and we could spend this time together, which was really, it was really, really good for me too, because I mean, he's my baby too and I miss him so much. And
this was actually due to some private donation from another CDH family.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Just was able to, you know, so
give back. Yeah. So we're doing this, hopefully it helps in some way to other families, because we're whatever we can do for other families, parents, now that we've experienced this, we would love to give back in any way that we can, because not knowing is, I feel like it almost was like a blessing in disguise. Like you hear about a lot of parents that find out prenatally and there's the struggles and challenges with that and the feelings and the emotions, but then finding out postnatally, it's the same thing. So it's like, do you want to know, because you're like stress and anxiety, and but then looking back now, it's like, okay, I, you know, this is what we were dealt with, and it's our story. I mean,
it is Grayson's story. And Grayson's story continues. We would really appreciate you guys down the road if you want to come back and give us an update on what he is doing and how he is thriving and We hope to hear that he is home soon and you guys are under one roof and enjoying your family together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're so looking forward to it.
Yes, thank you for taking the time today to share Grayson's story and your story. Greatly appreciated.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. And to all that's, you know, your CDH International does for everybody. We really appreciate all you do.
Oh, you're welcome. You're very welcome.
Thank you so much to Grayson's amazing family and to Tracy for doing this interview. We appreciate you all so much, especially appreciate you taking the time to do this while you're still in the hospital. And we look forward to doing an update soon after you're home. If you would like to share your story, please visit www.cdhi.org/share-your-story. And we would love to tell your story on the CDH radio show, the annual April 19th telethon, all over social media, and hopefully in your media as well. Thank you once again. Dawn Ireland from CDH International signing off, and we'll see you again next week.
This is my fight song. Take back my life.